stories of excitement.
Ooh, story homes.
Story homes adventure.
Glamour and glitter, fashion and fame. Story homes truly outrageous. Truly, truly, truly outrageous. Ooh, story home. The muse is contagious, outrageous. Story holds our name, no one else is the same. Story holds our name. Story Hall.
Hi, I'm Joey.
I'm Roger.
I'm Kevin.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Welcome to summer.
We made it.
I can't believe it.
We're officially in the summer now.
Yeah. Got my shorts on, got my flippy flops on.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Music's changed.
I've got no top on. I've got my clamshell bikini top on.
I've been listening to Katy Perry's.
I actually had one of those.
You really?
I did when you guys had your old house. I bought one and I wore it in the pool once.
Are they real clamshells? Those must be some big clamshells.
Oh, thanks. Someone's paying attention. My eyes are up here, Roger. It was a long time. There's a picture actually of me eating a foot long Subway sandwich, and there's a bunch of blown up dolphins in your pool.
Are you eating the sandwich in the pool?
Yeah, with a straight face.
Yeah, eating anything in a pool is funny.
Yeah,
but I think particularly a foot long Subway sandwich.
Any kind of sandwich. Sandwich is the top echelon. I feel like a funny in the pool.
I could see maybe like a fettuccine Alfredo would be funny.
A bowl that's like a salad, like a Caesar salad might be
Caesar
funny.
Salad soup. Soup is funny because it's so close really to funny. what you're standing
yeah.
in.
I think it's the mess factor is really what sells it. It's like
if you dropped your bowl of soup into the pool, you would just be in a giant bowl of soup at that point.
Yeah, you'd just be in more soup.
Yeah, you'd be swimming in your dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Mama always said, don't play with your food. Also, Papa said that too.
Yeah.
I was a rascal when I was a kid.
Yeah, what are you doing with all those chicken nuggets?
Shoving up my nose. Whose turn is it to do episode today?
I think it's mine. And I wanted to do the episode on Al Gore.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
Do you have it ready or?
No, I was just going to wing it.
Okay.
Okay. Al Gore. Oh God.
Should we save him?
Al, short for Alfred. His name is Alfred Gore.
Tag me in.
Okay, Joey, can you save me?
Yeah. So I also I don't have something planned, but I figured I read you guys a riddle and then whatever the answer to the riddle is, we can just do the episode on that. And I'm pretty sure I could figure something out.
Oh,
just like always.
Yeah. So, okay. So I'm going to describe someone and then I'm sure whatever their answer is, we can find a theme there. Okay.
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 So who is like a crystal gleaming bright, like a prism bending light, and he, she, or they can turn the day into night. Also, who can see the way the candles gleam, feel the sun throw off its beam, and turn life into a dream?
I mean, I would have said Al Gore, but... I mean, that sounds like some Sailor Moon shit to me.
Yeah, I was thinking Light Bright or Rainbow Bright, that one.
I mean, they all sound like they're cartoons from the 80s, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I could do a cartoon from the 80s. You guys want to do Gem and the Holograms?
Yeah.
That's actually a description of Synergy, who we'll talk about later. Anyway, so today's story hole, we're going to do Gem and the Holograms. I'm very excited about it. Do you guys know anything about Gem?
Absolutely nothing. Yeah, I mean, I know that she was like an 80s pop star, and that's about it.
She's outrageous. That's it. That's all.
Yeah, she's truly outrageous. So there was a woman named Christy Marks who worked on like G.I. Joe and the Transformers and stuff in the mid 80s. And she wanted to pitch a new show that was more geared to like, you know, traditionally what girls would like. And so she came up with the show called Gem and the Holograms. That was basically a pop band of a bunch of girls. And the idea behind this, of course, is that, you know, there's a whole Hasbro versus Mattel thing. There's a whole Barbie kind of cornering the girl market at the time. And they wanted to be able to sell toys. That's basically the gist of Saturday morning cartoons. It was just to get kids interested in the product so that then they could, you know, monetize that in some way.
So she was meant to compete with Barbie, huh?
Yes. Uh-oh. Yes. Although, a fun side note, the people who worked on Barbie caught wind of all this. And so they actually released this whole like Barbie series that where she was like Barbie. It was like a musician and stuff.
Oh,
right
that's
before,
funny.
Like the release of toys, like right before Gem came out. and Barbie looks like straight up a fake gem. It's very funny.
I think I remember seeing that Barbie.
Yeah.
Did you have it, Kevin?
I think I remember seeing that Barbie.
Yeah.
Dude, it's funny how like that's almost like a Bug's Life versus Ants situation, right?
Right.
You know how like movies will always try to get the one up, like Pixar will release something and then there'll be a shitty DreamWorks version of it that comes out a month before.
Yeah, that, I mean, that always seems to happen, right? There's always like Armageddon and Deep Impact, I think was one, or like the one with the volcanoes erupting. I don't know. Yeah. So I mean, that's the gist of it, is it was just made to sell toys, but it's actually a delightful show. I had an idea that I thought I would actually like it. And so I bought the series with the intent of making an episode on it. And I love it. I think it's a great show. And I think the music's awesome. Before we actually start telling the story, though, because there are a lot of characters, there's going to be two bands that are like the main bands. There's the good guy band and the bad guy band. And I figured I would just tell you all of their names and then you guys could choose which one you wanted, because they all have very distinct super new wave styles. And that way you can see which one you would end up looking like.
Okay.
In the good band, we have Jim, we have Kimber, Aja, Shayna, and Rhea. And then in the bad band, we have Pizzazz, Roxy, Stormer, then Clash, and then Jetta joins last.
I know the bad band's called the Misfits, right?
Yeah, the bad band's the Misfits.
I definitely want to be in the Misfits. Can I be Clash?
Yeah.
Clash seems right for you, Roger.
Yeah. I mean, the Misfits is a punk reference and Clash is a punk reference. So I think that's perfect. Well,
they took heavy inspiration from like actual bands. And Jem herself is supposed to be Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Give me the names of the Jem ones again, just to make things interesting.
You have Jem, Kimber, Aja, Shayna, Rhea.
I either want to be Rhea or Aja. I'll let you guys pick.
Yeah. I think Aja's the more interesting one.
I'll take Aja.
Yeah, you're an Aja. Okay. Do you think Shayna is a reference to Shania Twain?
Shayna Twain?
Yeah. Here's Clash.
Oh, shit. I look cool. I've got some good like pink purple hair that looks like it's kind of wild in the front.
Yeah. All right. So I'll describe them for you. So Clash actually is the bratty... younger cousin of a famous like videographer. And when she gets on the set, like for this thing that they're shooting, she has these little, it's like a little symbol that's attached to her wrist. And she wants to be obnoxious, she just smashes her wrists together and make this really loud noise. But it doesn't sound like cymbals crashing. It just sounds like a gnarly loud sound. And she just wants to be part of the band really bad. And eventually she becomes the fourth member of the band, which is pretty cool. That's like season two.
So Joe, you sent us this picture, and in it, look at what her right hand is doing. She's making a circle and she's holding it out below her waist, like that game, right? Isn't that a thing where if you could get somebody to look at the circle you're making with their finger, you get to punch them?
Yep.
Yeah.
She's clearly playing that game.
Well, I mean,
or it could be a guitar pick.
That seems right, because if she's kind of a bad guy, so that means she gets to punch people. Yeah. And you'll find the Misfits are actually very violent. So that's pretty fitting. Aja, however, is the adopted sister of Jerrica Benton and her sister Kimber, as well as Shayna. She is actually a kind of a tomboy. She's usually the driver for the car that they all ride in together. And she's also a savvy mechanic. She also plays the guitar, which is pretty cool.
this picture I'm looking of Aja. Aja?
Aja.
She looks like a straight up dork, though. That she's playing a tiny little guitar. Why is that guitar so small?
Wait. Well, it's a keytar.
It's not, though. They're strings.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a regular.
They changed the box art and stuff for her, but in the show, she plays keytar.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it. We can just get into the story now. I thought it would be fun for you guys to pick characters. All right, so let's just kind of give you guys a little bit of backstory, because a lot of what actually happens in the series, you get more information about where they came from, why their powers, who the parents are as time goes on. You don't get that all in the beginning, but because this is story hall, we have to condense a series into 40 minutes or so. I'm just going to go ahead and give you guys some spoilers, and then I'll tell you some more information as time goes on.
Okay.
So The story is centered around primarily a girl. She's about 20, 21 years old. Her name's Jerrica Benton. She's the older sister in the Benton family. And prior to the series, her mother, Jackie, who was a songwriter, passed away in a plane crash. And she left behind Jerrica and Jerrica's sister, Kimber, as well as their father. Before she passed, they actually adopted two girls. Like I said before, that's Aja and Shayna. And Emmett, the father, had started a bunch of businesses, but primarily like his big one was a music business under the label Starlight Music. And so after she passed, honor his late wife and do things that she, you know, that she would be proud of. And so he started another organization called Starlight House, which is an orphanage for girls, because, again, they had two adopted daughters. And if you're wondering how that's possible, it's because Emmett was such a successful entrepreneur and he had such a good heart that he had basically set up a foundation where all of his businesses, he could like siphon money from them in a good way to basically fund the orphanage. So we are introduced to basically the scene where the very first opening scene, you know, of this series is actually a memory of Jerrica's, of the passing of her father as he passed away. And we find that he left half of his company, Starlight Music, to Jerrica, and the other half goes to basically his secondhand man in the business, whose name is Eric Raymond. But this guy kind of has a questionable reputation. Now, as time goes, we see that Starlight House, the orphanage, it needs repairs. And so because, you know, obviously Jerrica knows that the money comes from all of the Starlight Industries, everything that, you know, that her father had made, she decides that she's going to go to Starlight Music and start asking questions and seeing how she can get some money for the orphanage, because it is truly falling apart. And so she goes there and she meets up with Eric Raymond, and he has hired a new staff, and she wasn't aware of this. And it's very clear that he's starting to make a bunch of moves in Emmett's absence, almost as if he was waiting for Emmett to die so he could take control of the company and then basically take it down a more lucrative but cutthroat path. So
is he popular? Do people at the company like him?
No.
Does everybody love him?
No one loves him, but we are introduced to this as he's been taking over. So everyone is basically an underling to him.
So you wouldn't say that everybody loves Raymond?
No, everybody does not love Raymond. but God damn it, they respect him. Everyone respects Eric Raymond. That's true. Which is also a good a good series. That would be a good reboot for Ray Romano.
Nobody loves Raymond, but God damn it, they respect him.
God damn it, they respect him. All right, so. So Jerrica Benton walks in and she's confronting Eric Raymond, and he's a skeezer. And basically he tells her that he wants to rework Starlight Music to fit his mold. He's going to basically put up this new band called the Misfits to win the Battle of the Bands so they can gain some exposure. But also he wants to make sure that they win. So he's going to book a bunch of terrible bands so that they look good in comparison. And Jerrica sees how shady this is and decides that she needs to do something about it. Now, at the time, he introduces them to the Misfits, and they burst through one of the back doors riding on guitar-shaped motorcycles, and they start singing, basically, and they're all in her face and shit. And what actually ends up happening is that this scene, it like morphs very slowly into a music video. And this is kind of the gist of how every episode works. There are three miniature like music videos and songs that are accompanied by every episode. And they were trying to basically ride off the wave of the success of MTV's music video platform. Oh. So each of these little music videos actually has like the name of the band and the name of the song in the bottom left corner, like it used to have on MTV and stuff like that.
That's
so
fun.
Basically, we get to see who they are. We get to see that they're trouble. And again, they're super new wave. They have paint all over their faces and like animal print and neon colors and giant. Every woman in the show has gigantic hair, which is great. Anyway, she basically says, so Jerrica sees all these girls and she's not impressed. She basically just calls them trash to their face, which is kind of sweet. And then just leaves. And she now has something to reflect about because her father's company is now going down the shitter. So she gets home and coincidentally, there's a package waiting for her there. And inside, there are mysterious, beautiful red earrings. And so she puts them on. She loves them. And when she puts them on, a gust of wind blows through the window and we see a bluish, purplish spirit appear. And it gives her a message that says, there's a secret wall behind Starlight Drive-In, which is it's a drive-in movie theater that Emmett Benton also owned. And she needs to go there. And so, of course, she tells all her sisters at the Starlight House, and it's the four of them, and they all decide that they're going to go there right now. And so they drive over to the Starlight Drive-In, and when they get around back, it's just a wall. but that purplish spirit is right there and says, like, trust me, just drive into this wall. Kind of like Harry Potter when he goes to that like whatever floor and a third, and you can just kind of put
three quarters or something like that.
Yeah. So they just drive through the wall, and when they get inside, they see this giant computer-ish synthesizer entertainment audio video machine. It's a giant supercomputer with all these like blipping lights and flashes and little noises, and that woman, the spirit, you see her face on the screen, and so she's going to introduce herself, and this is Synergy. Synergy is a computer that Eric Benton had been building and programming in secret. After the passing of his wife, he basically knew that the girls were going to need some sort of female mentor in their life. And so he wanted to make a computer version of their mother to kind of help raise the kids.
Huh.
And after he had built Synergy, it was very clear that it was too hard for him to actually look at the imagery of Jackie Benton. So he then reprogrammed it to make it into this purplish spirit that has like spandex and purple eyes and flies around with flowing hair. So basically what she can do is use remote micro projectors and make holograms go all over the place. She can make any sort of visual and what also seems audio appear wherever she wants, and she can control it. But again, it's like a super advanced AI. And what actually happened is those earrings, those beautiful, mysterious red star earrings, they actually have micro projectors built into them. So whoever has them on can also use them to make holograms. And in addition to that, Synergy also, after introducing herself and explaining all her powers, she opens up a wall, and behind the secret wall, there's a shit ton of music equipment and costumes and clothing, all sorts of cool stuff that Eric Benton left behind for the girls.
Is she sentient? Does she have the same personality as Jem's mother?
She was supposed to, but he tried to like reprogram it so that it was less like the mother. But she does have all of this this all comes later on in the series, but she does have like a catalog of Jackie Benton's old music and stuff. So she actually does have a lot of like memories and stuff that are programmed that are kind of suppressed.
Does Jem look at Synergy as kind of like her mother or not really?
Not really. They're just kind of like teammates, basically.
Gotcha.
But she does have like the right answers and makes the right moves whenever she needs to. It's kind of like Kit from Knight Rider. Like, you just know that he's going to be there and kind of do whatever you need whenever you need it. So,
gotcha.
So anyway, a bit of time passes, and sure enough, that battle of the bands that Eric Raymond was trying to rig up is going forward. But so let me explain. So we're at a kind of a small venue. It's at a local park, and the Misfits are on stage, and they're about to win, obviously, because the whole thing's been rigged. But out of nowhere, across from that stage, we hear right before they announce who the winner is, we see Kimber, Aja, Shayna, and a beautiful giant pink-haired front woman whose name is Jem, and they just start shredding, and everybody in the crowd starts going wild, including a guy who looks like Crocodile Dundee, who seems to be in the crowd all the time.
He's like a running joke.
Straight up Crocodile Dundee, and they never acknowledge him. He never has a speaking role, but whenever there's a show being played, there's a bunch of generic looking people and a Crocodile Dundee. It's very funny. But anyway, they're good. Now, we don't see Jerrica Benton anywhere, but obviously you can kind of, you know, dot those I's and cross those T's that Jem is Jerrica in disguise, and she has the earrings on so that she can basically say Showtime Synergy or Showtime's over, and her entire body becomes basically has a hologram costume on to make her into this pop star.
Oh, so her earrings are little mini projectors that project holograms.
Yeah,
okay. and she can
use them independently too. So if she wants to have like a clone of herself somewhere else, she can use one of them to do that. And if she wants to have like one of them bring up a bunch of puppy dogs, she can do that with the other one. So she's like really, it's very much like Synergy is like on the phone call whenever she needs, and because they're like, hey, I need this, can you like do this for me real quick, ta 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 ta, and she just
clicks. So the holograms make her look like a different person. She's not even recognizable.
I mean, her face is very clearly Jerrica, but I mean, she has face paint on, and but she just looks different. And throughout the series, only the bandmates ever know that she is Jem. And that's it.
Yeah. Do you think she could use the earrings to make copies of herself to use the earrings to make copies of herself?
Oh my God.
Wish for more wishes.
I don't have the exact number, but Synergy is capable of producing something like 8 million computations or like projections. So she could very well make a bajillion gems if she wanted to and make them all appear like they're all doing that.
I would love to see that.
Yeah. That's a lot of power.
There's actually one of the episodes, Jerrica feels bad because she feels like she's overworking Synergy just because she keeps like having to switch back and forth and do a bunch of stuff. It's pretty funny. The crowd is now torn and there's a news crew there. And basically Jerrica uses this opportunity. So she turns into Jerrica, not into Jem. And she goes to confront Eric Raymond and she calls him out in front of everybody and says, this is bullshit. Like, what you're doing is wrong. And so he basically just says, you know what? I'm just going to double down on this. Here's what's going to happen. We're going to have another battle of the bands. And if the band that you're backing, Jerrica, which is Jem and the Holograms, wins, then you can have my half of the company and vice versa. If the Misfits win, then I get your half of the company and we'll call it clean at that point. But since we have all these news crews and stuff looking over, there's actually a dude who's the film producer's name is Howard Sands, and he's been scouting the show. And he just walks up and says, let me sweeten the deal. The winner gets a film contract and a mansion. Which is very, 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 very funny, actually. And so they shake hands. It's going to be on. And so basically, while all this conversation is going on, the Misfits use this as a distraction to start stealing all of the equipment from the Holograms because they're actually bad people, basically. They just toss all the hologram stuff into the back of their black tour van and start taking off. And then, of course, Jem and the Holograms see all this and they hop into their rockin' roadster and they just jet off into a gnarly chase. And what looks like the PCH, which is like a Pacific Coast Highway for anyone who's not from California. But what's funny about the rockin' roadster is that the main theme song, if you listen to the whole thing, they don't stop talking about that goddamn Rockin' Roadster because they just wanted to sell the toy. Like, there's all like, it's like,
is
so
it really
much,
called the Rockin' Roadster?
It's the Rockin' Roadster. Yeah, it's this pink car. But they just, oh my God, and a Rockin' Roadster, it's too much. Anyway, so that's the car that they use. And they're in a car chase, and basically, because they're getting, the Misfits start throwing all the gear at them just to try to make them crash, and they veer off a cliff but have enough brakes so that they're just kind of teetering on the edge. And of course, you know, obviously Jerrica uses her hologram powers to kind of flag down somebody, and it happens to be her boyfriend, whose name is Rio Pacheco, and
it sounds like a San Rio character.
Yeah, basically. But but Rio's there, and he basically toes them out, and he also becomes the band manager later on. So just note, Rio is kind of important to the show. He's just kind of always around, and they share kisses from time to time. It's pretty nice.
So also, holograms can't actually interact with the physical world in this show, right?
No. Yeah. Okay. So Jerrica has to be really careful about like when she uses the holograms, so basically what she does is she makes the hologram like point and say like, we need your help over here. And then when he goes over there, then obviously her real form is there and the hologram disappears.
Gotcha.
So, but in addition to Rio, we have one other character that I want to introduce. That's part of the Starlight House. That's also kind of important. She's a young girl. Her name's Ashley and she's kind of a twerp. She actually gets into trouble. She doesn't understand, like she doesn't respect anybody really. But she's basically just on the edge, I don't know. She's like rough around the edges. She's like on the fringe, I guess, of the foster system. And she just kind of like doesn't listen and like rolls off and tries to like finagle money from people and stuff. She's not perfect, but she's obviously just a flawed kid, but she becomes important as well. So with that being said, that evening, Eric Raymond calls, he picks up his phone. He calls his thug for a favor. And this guy, he wears like wraparound glasses. He has a flat top. He goes on to become Eric's go-to thug. But also a funny side note, his original name for the show was just Perv. Yeah, that was his name. They're like, oh, maybe we should rethink that. He's definitely kind of a pervy guy too. He has like a pervy voice and stuff. But he's also just kind of brutal. So Eric just tells him I need you to cause some trouble, Zipper. And so that night when the girls are starting to go to bed, he breaks into the Starlight House and the girls all hear him. And so Jericho runs down to confront what they think is a thief. But in the process, he panics and he side-checks Kimber, who's holding a lantern, and it knocks to the floor and breaks and starts a fire. And straight up, he just jumps out the window and runs away. But it burns down the entire Starlight House. The orphanage is now, it's burnt to the ground, and there's nothing they can do about it.
And do all the orphans get out in time?
Everyone gets out. Ashley runs in to get like the honor jar, which just has money in it. But but then they have to like confront her and be like, "What are you doing? Like, your life is more important than that." And then she starts getting angry because she feels like everyone's getting mad at her for trying to do something good. Anyway, so they don't have anywhere to go. All the girls, all the orphans, they have nowhere to go, and they just need to come up with something. But that producer that we talked about earlier, Howard Sands, he's the one who has the mansion that he's going to give away for free. They decide, like, well, you know what? What if we just ask him if we can borrow it? And so they're going to go. They're going to show up. They're going to plan on a show for him and explain what happened. And hopefully he'll have a heart and, of course, let them in. Now, there is a chase scene that happens after this. But it's not really all that important. I just want to use the opportunity to point out that when they're trying to get away from the misfits, they pull into an alley and turn the car into a dumpster.
What? Why are they trying to get away from the misfits?
The misfits are always trying to chase them down and try to be like two steps ahead of them so they can like fuck up whatever they're doing. They're just brutal.
Can the car transform? Oh, it's a hologram.
Hologram, yeah. Okay, so like they just turn it into a dump. That's their solution. Let's just turn it into a dumpster, which I thought was really funny. But anyway, so they go to the mansion. They talk to Mr. Sands, and he says, of course, the girls can stay in the mansion temporarily. But obviously the misfits show up and Pizzazz starts throwing a fit, and she actually shoves him into a pool, and then she grabs a nearby bulldozer and tries to run Jericho over with it.
Oh shit.
Yeah. It's very good.
So ridiculous.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff like that happens in the show, which is why it's great and everyone should love it. Anyway, Rio grabs her last second, pulls her out, and that's fine. So they get the keys. They go into the locked estate and they start setting up, and during all this stuff, the misfits are still nearby and they're spying on the mansion, and they see Ashley, the little girl, and she walks up to them and basically she's trying to calm them and saying like the misfits are saying to her, like, "Hey, little girl, like, let us into this mansion." She's like, why would I want to do that? And they're like, "Well, what can we do for you?" And she says, "Well, I need $30. If you give me $30, I'll open the gate for you." And they're like, "All right, fuck it." So they give her $30 and separate, the misfits sneak in onto the grounds, and Zipper, the thug, he also sneaks in and he starts his next scheme, which is to take a giant bomb and then poorly place it underneath one of the couch cushions where it's still visible. And he's going to try to blow up this house too.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So the girls are all singing and practicing their music when Eric Raymond pulls up and he sees that the misfits are out on the state grounds, which they should not be at this time. So he calls out to them. He's like, "No, there's a bomb. You need to get out of here." Because obviously he knows that Zipper's doing some shady shit. And sure enough, it explodes a big chunk of the house, but it's actually like the servants' quarters. So it doesn't actually, there's no one in the room when it happens, but it blows out a whole, like, big old chunk in the wall. And the police and the news crews show up and they take some eyewitness accounts. And basically, they all see at this point that the misfits are probably shady folk. But also at this time, a famous designer happens to come by because she just wants to visit, and her name is Countess du Voisin, and she sees what happens and she basically says, like, "I know who you guys are and I see that you've been going through a bunch of shit. Let me just help you out. I'm going to give you an invitation to a fancy party that I'm going to have on my yacht tonight, and it'll be good for you guys to kind of like get out there and network with other good people because I think that you deserve it at this point." And so obviously they're like, "Yeah, of course we'll go." And so they go there and the holograms are on the inside and they're kind of schmoozing. They're meeting some radio DJs, some famous folks, and a music video producer whose name is Anthony Julian. And they all are on board. Every one of these people wants to help out the holograms. Meanwhile, Jem is outside, like on the, is it a balcony if it's on a boat?
I think it's a poop deck.
A poop deck.
Yeah. Poop deck.
So yeah, Jem is with Rio on the poop deck and they're overlooking the ocean, and Jem is getting kind of flirty with him and he's resisting because he actively says he wishes Jericho was there, and Jem is making a move on him. He says, "I barely know you."
And so he doesn't even know that his girlfriend is Jem.
No. And actually, he never finds out for the duration of the series.
Wow, really?
No, he never knows. There's some close calls, but they actually released a comic book a couple years ago. And in the comic book, she almost tells him, but she ends up not.
What's the point? Is it like a superhero conundrum kind of thing?
I think
it's... Why does it have to be a secret?
I've never been able to figure that out. I don't know why.
It was just the dogma sure enough, of the 80s.
Yeah. I guess it's just more mysterious that way. But so truly only the bandmates know. But anyway, Jem is hitting on him, and it's starting to work. And they're going to smooch. And they start leaning in. You know how it is, right? When you have your first smooch.
Yeah, I've been
there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the Misfits show up.
I love smooching.
Yeah?
So tell good.
I've never actually done that before. Can you give me a little lesson?
Yeah. You just...
it's a three-step plan, right?
You got to close one eye.
Got it.
And then you got to open one lip. And then just lean in.
Mm-hmm.
And just... Are you doing it?
Yeah. Wow. I get it now. I get what all the fuss was about. So anyway, right when they're about to smooch, the Misfits show up and they just like hop on board and they just start running around for like 5 minutes, just breaking shit and screaming, and they're trashing the dining hall. They're spilling shit on people and tipping tables. They're just fucking assholes and they're just making a mess of everything. They refer to it as making mischief.
That's one of the songs, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And that's the music video for that. That's a good song. So Countess Duvesson calls the captain to intervene because all these girls are like wrecking the party. And while distracted, the Misfits sneak into the control room and they are like, okay, well, we see that there's this giant oil tanker. Think of like a Titanic, basically, coming up on them. And so they turn the yacht in the path of the oil tanker so they can crash and try to kill everybody on the boat.
Wow.
Jeez. Yeah, it's pretty rough. But it's not enough that the yacht actually kind of skims just barely past it. But in the process of doing so, Jem falls over the rail and Rio grabs her and she's just dangling there. But Rio's able to actually pull her back up. In the heat of the moment, he closes one eye, she raises one lip, they lean in. It's a beautiful moment.
Is Jem mad that her boyfriend kissed another woman thinking that it wasn't his girlfriend?
There's actually a whole side narrative about that, yes.
Yeah, I bet.
Well, it's very weird. The whole thing about this entire... So there's a love triangle where two of the members are the same person. And Jerrica is getting jealous of Jem.
So wait, does that mean he's liking Jem more as time goes on?
Because the thing is, like, as time goes on, because he becomes the band's manager,
uh-huh,
he actually ends up spending more time with Jem. And Jerrica just kind of fades away. And like, there comes a point where he even talks to her. And is like, I don't even know if this is something that we can fix at this point, but I never see you anymore. And it just becomes this whole issue where like, he very clearly was dedicated to Jerrica, but since she's never around, she's always busy. She's not paying attention to him. And then he sees this beautiful, gosh, she's so beautiful. pink haired bombshell.
I mean, it's very unfair because she's got the same personality as the girl that he's in love with, but she's also a great musician and dresses cool.
Yeah, it's
cool.
Just like an upgraded like,
of
version.
He would like her more.
His girlfriend.
Jerrica does act a little bit more serious.
Yeah.
She kind of like gets shit done, but also Jerrica's just as beautiful. She's blonde hair, blue eyes. She dresses cool as hell. I love them both.
I mean, it's like if you and I were dating Joey, and then also there's just it's like a Steve Urkel versus Stefan Urkel situation. You know, there's like an alternate identity that's just inherently cooler. You can't expect him not to fall in love with her.
I don't know, because like I would say it's more like a Stefan Urkel and a super Stefan Urkel.
Yeah,
I want to address. Jerk is great. Jerk is great. How could you not like her?
I want to address two things about what you're saying. One, we've only acknowledged two sides of that triangle. There's a third side, and that is that Jerrica is loved by Jem. Is that part of the story?
Of course. Of course Jem likes Jerrica, right?
Wait, so Jerrica is the girl and Rio's the boy. I'm not sure who Jerrica is. I think Jerrica is a... Walls of Jerrica is a wrestling move.
Throwing random names around. Never mind. Also, this is very deep, mature content for a Saturday morning cartoon.
There's a lot. It's basically a soap opera for kids. That's the way it's been described. It's very much like that. Yeah.
That's a good point, though, Kevin. In a love triangle, do all three people have to be in love with another person to make it a full triangle?
Yeah, that's what the triangle is.
Or is it just two people love one person?
I think it's a combo of three people and any sort of love.
Okay. So it's not like Jem and Jerrica have to also be in love to make it a full love triangle.
I feel like the sides. You have to have one person going up, like chasing the tail of each person in a circle.
So then, in this case, the three of us.
Yeah.
I'm in love with Joey. Yeah. Joey's in love with Kevin.
Kevin's in love with Roger.
Kevin's in love with Roger. Yeah. Is that the only true love triangle? What if Kevin and I are both just in love with Joey? Is that a love triangle?
I think we're just duking it out then.
I think, what if I'm also have feelings for both of you?
Well, then
that seals up the triangle, kind of.
Polyamorous, yeah. I think.
That's just a love I guess. In order to be a full triangle, we all have to love one, like a different person, I guess.
I don't know. This is hard. That's why I always advise to stay out of love triangles, because no one knows. Is it isosceles? Is it acute? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. There's nothing acute about the situation.
Everyone's equilateral love triangle. That's the healthiest of love triangles.
Yeah, that's true. That's your polyamorous relationship right there. Everybody's having a good time. So Jerrica is jealous of Jem, because she doesn't know like who is he kissing. That's basically what's
is
up.
Is that one of the songs?
Yeah, it is. it's not on our top 10 list though. But also Rio is very confused and he puts up a good fight. He always says no, he always says the right thing, but sometimes he gets sucked in, and I get it.
It's not a fair situation for him, is all I'm saying.
I know. No. Are you fucking kidding me? You have this beautiful pink babe kind of in front jerk. Of you?
Jerrica's being mean by putting him in that situation.
Yeah. And I think she's aware of that, which is probably why she's not like angry. She's just kind of like jealous of her other self. She never gets mad at Rio.
Okay. That's good.
But
I'm glad that's the case.
But poor Rio is just, man, his brain is all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard. It's a hard situation. There's no right answer. Yeah. All right. So anyway, they survive that little yacht almost crashing. It doesn't actually happen, but now they have all these new fancy friends on their side and everybody hates the misfits and everybody's coming together. They're like, hey, you know what? We want you guys to win. So we're all going to pool our money and resources. We're going to help you guys go to Paris. We're going to shoot a music video for you. Yada, yada, yada. There's a whole scene here where basically Zipper tries to murder them, fails again.
Jeez.
Back at home, Ashley, that rebellious young girl from the Starlight House, she sneaks off. She wants to see the Misfits again. So she goes into the bar where they hang out as a tiny little kid and just basically goes over to them and says, like, hey, like, I want to hang out with you guys. And they're like, what are you doing, Twerp? Get out of here. But then also Pizzazz, who's just a sociopath, was like, wait a minute, we could probably use her. And so they start playing this game where they're just kind of like manipulating her to be like, yeah, you can be one of us. You got to do some favors, but yeah, you can be part of our friendship and like all this stuff. And so poor little Ashley is starting to get in more with the Misfits. Again, she was, you know, kind of an outcast in the Starlight House. She doesn't really quite, she's rough around the edges. And now she finally has a group that kind of accepts her for being her little troublesome self. So time is passing on, right? We have time. We're waiting basically 6 months for the Battle of the Bands to show up. And the records are being pressed. The holograms are playing. They're selling merch. They have a following now. And so months are obviously passing by and they're making these big moves. Meanwhile, the Misfits are just kind of, they're just trying to screw things up and like tear down their posters and ruin all this stuff. And so one little side note, at this point, Kimber actually goes to Eric Raymond to basically just try to talk to him and say, like, you need to call off the Misfits. They're out of line. Like, this isn't the way things should be. And Eric Raymond sees that there's a little bit of jealousy from Kimber's part to Jem, basically, because she always feels like she's being like excluded. She never is the one that everyone wants to interview. It doesn't seem like it's equitable. And so he sees that and he starts preying on it. He starts planting these seeds of basically deceit. Now, Well, I guess we can leave it at that. Eventually, she does actually leave the band. And so does Stormer from the Misfits. And they start their own little project together before they return back to their other bands. Also, a cool thing in the comic books, those two end up dating, which is pretty neat and progressive. But anyway, this whole time they're trying to line up this interview so they can be live on the air and everybody can see them again, get some more exposure. And they're going on this famous show. It's a live interview. Now, the Misfits want in on that, and so they break in. They use Ashley to kind of get their way into the door by basically having Ashley assault the security guard. obviously, he's not going to hit a kid, but they use that to slip in, and they try to crash the actual interview by like actually going on air. But obviously, the interviewer, the VJ, she's not having it, so she has them escorted out physically. And on the way out, Pizzazz just straight up slaps her in the face. And then tips some shit over and starts a fire in the actual studio. They are able to put it all out and stuff. And again, Rio is able to.
They have a pattern.
Yeah, these Misfits, man, they're wild, huh?
They're wild. They're brutal. Yeah. But you know, again, Rio is able to rescue Jem from the debris, and he actually escorts her to a room to get some rest. And then this is basically the moment where you start seeing that they're now becoming a couple more than Jericho was, because he's just taking care of her. They obviously have some sort of a chemistry together and all that stuff. So anyway, time passes by. We have a slick talking Texas promoter who decides he's going to get the Holograms to play a big show in Vegas. He also books the Misfits for the same show as their opening act, because basically he sees that this is a problem for both of them. The Holograms don't want anything to do with the Misfits. The Misfits feel insecure about being opening act for the Holograms, and he wants to see these sparks fly because it's fun for him. So basically, the Misfits come up with a plan. They say if the Holograms can't go on to be the headliners, then they'll have to be, you know, defaulted as the new headliners, and that'll boost their ratings. So what they're going to do is they're going to kidnap Ashley to come with them to Vegas so they can use her. But it's not like they don't like physically grab her. They just can like convince her to do it. And since obviously the lady who's running Starlight House doesn't give a shit, somehow they're able to get this 10-year-old girl to come with them to Vegas. So anyway, while they're at the casino, Aja's at the casino. She sees Ashley and she runs outside to get her. And Ashley is crawling through the bottom of a bus where the storage area is, you know, opens up on both sides. And Aja crawls in after her. But as soon as she gets in and Ashley gets out, the Misfits close close and lock the little compartment so that she's going to be stuck underneath this bus heading to New York. And that way she can't play the show. That's why they needed Ashley, was to convince basically Aja to come outside.
That was all stuff. Part of their plan is to have her like a little mouse trap.
That was their wild plan, and it gets super weird. So, but basically, if Aja's not back on time, then the Holograms are going to lose their spot, then the Misfits can go on, etc. Now, this is important, but obviously, everyone's looking for Aja, and she's nowhere to be found. Rio goes to check in like the Misfits changing room, and while it's not explicitly said, Pizzazz closes the door behind the two of them. She walks in and basically says to him, if you leave Jem and come work for the Misfits, then she's going to do some favors for him. So you can take that as you will.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Pizzazz, man. Yeah. She's...
She just takes what she wants. That's basically it. She always flirts with Rio. She always like says stuff, and he always just kind of brushes it off. But that's like the one time she kind of like actually kind of confronts him and is like, hey, like, what's up? And then he's just like, no, and he walks out. But anyway, Aja does find a really wacky way to get back to the show. So basically, she starts banging on the bottom of the bus, and the passengers think that the tire popped. And so the driver stops and pulls out, and when he opens up that bottom compartment, she doesn't stop to explain. She just starts booking it and running. And the bus driver's like yelling at her, like, what's going on? Like, who are you? And there's these two thugs who are catcalling her. And they basically get in a fight over where the Goldust Casino is, which is where the venue is, which is really funny. But while they're fighting, a cowboy who wasn't even part of this conversation pulls up on a motorcycle and says, I'll give you a lift to the Goldust Casino. And it makes no sense. If that was hard to follow, that's exactly what happens. That's going to be the clip that I post on Instagram. It's wild. I mean, I love the show, but some of it's really weird. So anyway, okay, so while all this is happening, Ashley overhears Pizzazz and Roxy talking shit about her. So she finds out, like, oh my God, they're manipulating me. This sucks. Like, they're not my friends. And so she's hiding behind, basically, it's like a cardboard cutout. And while this is happening, Stormer is actually standing up for her because Stormer has a heart. We've already kind of established that. So she sets out to find Ashley, and she does. And Stormer goes behind the little cardboard cutouts, and she's sitting there with her, and they're just talking. And she's trying to console the little girl, and she admits that, you know what, Pizzazz and Roxy intimidate her too. But while they're back there, they actually overhear Zipper talk about how they're going to steal this casino money, and they're going to plant it on Jem. And sure enough, so the security comes through, and they put Jem in handcuffs. They're going to arrest her. And Ashley runs out and says this is what happened. She was framed, but she's a little girl. No one's listening until they see another woman who's wearing like head to toe cloak kind of stuff. She's like very covered up, and she walks past the misfits and past the holograms. And she says to the police that she can corroborate the story in private. And it's Stormer. She turns on the misfits and she says what happened and basically gets Jem off scot-free. And now Ashley and Stormer are buddies. Stormer is established as is kind of a good guy, even though she's on the bad guy team. And then we can kind of move over. Now, there are 2 days left before the Battle of the Bands, and Eric Raymond is desperate because he's losing. And so he sends a private detective to get some dirt on the holograms. And sure enough, he tracks down the hidden entrance where Synergy lives. And since no one's around, he just grabs a wooden chair and starts smashing Synergy, the computer, to pieces and breaks the whole thing. Oh, no. It's just a mess. Yeah. Which is obviously going to be a problem for the holograms, the actual holograms, like making them. But also, it's kind of sad because at this point, we just think of her as our friend now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while driving nearby, Synergy alerts the girls via earring that there's an intruder. So they spin around and they disguise themselves as old ladies in a station wagon. And they follow the detective back to Starlight Records to figure out what's going on. They find out that he's working for Eric Raymond. They head back to find Synergy, but she's all busted up, and it's sad. But
it is sad.
But it was a failsafe. She deployed a hologram of herself. And
oh, thank God!
Yeah, so she's fine. She was safe all along.
Well,
so
what was the
how does that work though? Because if the holograms aren't physical, if you grabbed a chair and thought he was smashing it, it would just pass right through the
she's
hologram.
Very advanced AI technology. So she's probably looking for where the impact would have happened and then changed the way that the machine looks. So it seems like it's breaking. That's a wonderful machine right there.
Maybe she projected a hologram over like a cardboard box or something.
She does do that shit. So I feel like that's probably part of what could have been. So just trust me. It makes sense. I know you're thinking it doesn't. It does. Okay. So what they'll do is they're going to decommission. They're going to take her apart, and they're going to rescue all of her parts. They're going to bring them back to the new mansion and reassemble her and hope that Synergy is still fine. And so they do that, and it works. And of course, you know, Eric Raymond hears from the detective that Synergy is over there inside that weird little area. So he gets back over there. He wants to go find, he wants to go see it for himself. And when he gets there, obviously there's no Synergy there. There's also no mess there anymore either. It's just an empty room. Okay, so anyway, obviously, Eric doesn't see what he wants, so he heads back to, to the Starlight Music. And when he gets to his office, the Misfits are waiting for him, but also with them is Ashley the Orphan. And he convinces them to leave her with him, and he forces the little girl to make a phone call to Jem and demands that the girls show up to Starlight Drive-In immediately, or he's going to hurt her. So the Battle of the Bands comes, and basically, he turns Ashley over to the Misfits, who grab her and they lock her in a trunk. And Stormer's watching, but she basically reluctantly leaves. She just can't get herself to go against the girls. And so with Ashley still in the trunk, they go on and they play their set and they shred pretty hard. They hear Eric's warning and the holograms, they go and show up to that empty storage room, but there's a bunch of scary dudes waiting for them. And when they see Ashley isn't there, Jem elbows one of the goons and hops on the Rockin' Roadster to try to get out of there. But basically, Zipper cuts her off, chases her on a motorcycle, and he grabs her and pulls her back. While he's pulling her back, she drops one of her earrings on the floor and ends up getting kind of locked back into this empty little room with all the other goons there. So back at the show, it's intermission, 15 minutes left, and Rio hears Ashley calling from the trunk, and he takes her out of the trunk. And she tells him everything. So he's like, oh shit, I have 15 minutes to get to the drive-in and to get back. And so he runs over there. But at the time, Jem and Synergy have come up with a plan. Since she left one of her earrings on the floor outside and there's a guard outside, she says, She's basically going to tell she's going to use synergy to conjure up some lions inside of the room, and outside a fake fleet of cops pulling up. And so Synergy does all these like holograms to basically scare all the bad guys. And
I'm sorry, what is she? Cops outside? And do you say lions? Inside?
Lions, yeah, actual lions are running. Which is wild. But
you know, like that old saying, stuck between a cop and a lion?
Yep, that's the one. But it's all just obviously a big trick. Rio pulls up with the real cops. And for any reason, I don't know why, he... Obviously, they get out and the cops arrest all the thugs. But Rio just borrows one of the police interceptors and then drives them back, drives them back to the show. And this all happens within 15 minutes, apparently. But yeah, so they get on stage right at the last minute and they're blowing the minds of everybody. They go on the shredding. It's everybody's loving it. Crocodile Dundee guys having a great time. All the young girls in the crowd. There's at least one 34-year-old man who was really enjoying this. And
is that you?
It could be you know, any of us, really. But anyway, they win, obviously, by audience cheer, and they get the mansion and the movie contract. They won the battle of the bands, and now the company is Jerrica's. So,
that's great.
All right.
Now,
what happens to Raymond?
So he should be in jail, but he admits that being sleazy and having lawyers and money is easy to get off. He has no problem. But he's back at Starlight Records, and when they're walking up to the office, he's packing up some belongings, and Jerrica confronts him and says, like you suck, you're a fool. And he just slaps her.
Oh, shit.
And, yeah, he slaps her, but Rio's right there, and he just punches the dude in his filthy fucking nose and knocks him out. And that's kind of it. That's the main plot of the first season. There's some other stuff that happens. We find out Pizzazz is like from a really rich family and basically throws a fit and gets her dad to buy out the movie studio so that Eric Raymond can then take over as the director for their new documentary. But I
so
mean,
that's
it doesn't,
all just the first season, huh?
This is all first season. Like, honestly, season one and half season two are good. And then that's all you really need to know. There's some other cool like side plot stuff. There's a little girl named Bonnie. She's Vietnamese and she's going blind from a degenerative eye condition. And so they're trying to raise money to help her. She ends up finding her father, all this other stuff. You meet some other celebrities. There's another band called the Stingers, which is garbage. There's a weird ballad band. They're not worth listening to. But there's also one other person to note. Who's a side character whose name is Luna Dark. She's another famous musician. And here's a fun thing. Jem has two voice actresses. There's one for when she's talking and one for when she's singing. And the one that when she's, I think she truly has a really good voice. The woman who's singing, her name is Britta Phillips. And she actually is now releasing music under the name Luna, which is really cool, I think.
So like what, 40 years after Jem, she's actually becoming that character?
She's just like, I think it's like an homage to it. She's just her own self. It's her and her husband. They have a band together, but I just like that she like on this like side character that no one knows about is using that as her. But also, if you guys want to listen to her, she still makes music. She actually is going to have a live show on the 27th this week from her Echo Park front room, her living room.
That's cool. Yeah.
So go check that out. Britta Phillips.
It kind of seems like Rio is the hero of the show.
Yeah, I mean, which is kind of problematic, but it's also a sign of the age of like the 1980s where there's like the boy that rescues the girl kind of thing.
Yeah.
So he's always around. He's kind of a nothing guy. I mean,
Jem should like you instead of Rio. Well, is what you're saying.
I know that I'm not saying it, but I'm just kidding. I'm far too old. She's like 21 and I'm 34.
Well, Joey, imagine you are also 21. Would you rather date Jem or Jerrica?
Also, she's like 61 now, so.
Yeah.
You're both 61.
Yeah. That's hard because the obvious answer is Jem because she's a beautiful pop star. But also, I'm kind of I'm afraid of traveling and shit. I don't like do anything. I'm a homebody. And Jerrica's a homebody. And I can get behind like volunteering at an orphanage and stuff. That's cool with me. I do that. But I can't say that I'd want to go to Paris and shoot a music video. That's not something I would do.
So maybe Jerrica's more your speed.
Yeah, I think so. Jerrica, if you're out there.
Man, that's going to be a problem because I'm dating Jem. So.
Is that because Eskimo cousins?
Yeah, I think so.
And I am both of those girls.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no.
I got the hologram
triangle.
Close one eye, raise a lip. All right. Well, we have one last thing to do real quick. And that's obviously because this is a music based show. I wanted to give everyone the top 10 official Story Hole songs category so that you guys would know what songs to listen to. There are 187 songs on the actual discography for the show.
Wow.
But these are truly the top 10. I think we should do an honorable...
Have you listened to all 187, Joey?
I have.
Wow.
I would say there's probably 50 songs that I know majority of the words to. I legitimately like this music. Yeah. In the top 10, I could probably sing you all these songs. But I do want to give honorable mention to Misfits in Hawaii, which I should also put up on the Instagram because that's just a terrible song, but I also kind of like it. So number 10 is I Am a Giant.
I think I had that one towards the top of my Misfits list. I tend to gravitate more towards the Gem songs than the Misfit songs. So
I was curious, actually. For some reason, I thought both of you guys would like Misfit songs more. I definitely like the Gem songs more.
No, I think I like the Misfit songs more.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Number 9, Glitter and Gold. It's very dynamic. It's very in your face. Number 8, I Got My Eye on You. That one's kind of nice, and I don't know, that one feels like late 80s, early 90s to me. Number 7, Making Mischief. It's when you're on a boat and you want to throw shit at people. Number 6 is a hybrid between the actual theme song, the song I Am Gem, and Truly Outrageous, which are all basically the same song that gets changed over time. But the good thing about the Truly Outrageous version is that they don't talk about the Rock and Roadster at all. Which is garbage. Number 5, Taking It All. Number 4, It's Working Out. That's a good one. We're getting into the good stuff. Number 3, Click Clash. Very good. Number 2, Only the Beginning. And number 1 is the song about Synergy, She's Got the Power. Let's see, is there anything else? I think that's pretty basic. Do you guys have any questions about anything? I can tell you anything.
I just had an interesting reflection. I felt like we're obviously supposed to hate the Misfit characters, but if we look at it from their perspective, they're basically up against this other team that has all this crazy technology and all this crazy backing, and they're already living in the mansion that we're supposed to win at the end of this thing. Like, That's pretty unfair.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make a counterpoint to you. The Misfits have the entire backing of the Starlight Music Company. Phyllis Gabor, aka Pizzazz, comes from an oil tycoon. Her family's filthy rich as well, so she has all the money in the world as well. And lastly, they don't know about the technology. They don't know that the holograms exist. They just know that the other girls are better than them.
So is the like Starlight Corporation not supporting Jem's band?
No, because Eric Raymond's being a piece of shit.
I thought that she still had half claim to it.
She does technically, but he won't even let her access the money. So she's not able to do anything aside from what Emmett left for her and her sisters in that little secret room with Synergy.
That does even things up a good deal.
Yeah, see? All good. Even Stevens.
I think it's crazy that the Misfits are able to commit so many acts of like arson and attempted murder. Blatant and murder. Nobody really seems to mind too much.
It's 1987, so.
Yeah, it was a lawless Wild West back then.
Well, I mean, Eric Raymond, he also had said that, you know, like if you have money and lawyers, we can basically do whatever you want. Anything else?
No.
I got it's incredible. That's a
very cool.
That's a moving story for sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's basically all I had to say. I'd like to say goodbye, but instead of that, I'm going to say show's over, Synergy.
Bye, everybody.
Cool. See you next time.
Show's over, Synergy.